Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living in the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today we have a return guest, someone who I really enjoyed having on before and learned a great deal from. We're going to speak with Mr. Brandon LaGreca. He's a licensed acupuncturist in the state of Wisconsin. He's nationally certified in the practice of Oriental medicine. In 2015, he was diagnosed with stage 4 non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and he achieved full remission 8 months later by following an integrative medicine protocol that included immunotherapy without the use of chemotherapy, radiation, or surgery. He's a thought leader in the synthesis of traditional and functional medicine, having written numerous articles on the subject. He's the author of Cancer and EMF Radiation, How to Protect Yourself from the Silent Carcinogen of Electropollution, and Cancer, Stress, and Mindset. He's focused on a lot of things that I think that we as doctors and patients really need to concentrate on in the age of the pandemic. People are so caught up in what they can't control that they end up not doing anything. And today we're going to speak about something that's very dear to all of us because it's about life, and that's water. I think we all take it for granted, you know, that it's just water, it doesn't matter, you don't really need to have a lot of it. And I want to talk about it from a biological, structural, physiological level, because that's something I think that everybody can take control over. So, Mr. LaGreca, I want to thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, thanks for having me back on your show, Dr. George. It's always a pleasure.
Oh, and for me as well. You've written some really important articles on your website, and that's the empoweredpatientblog.com. And I wanted to get your take on water, because it's something, as I said in the intro, that, you know, it's bottled water, tap water. People really have no idea how important it is to their body and their cellular health. So first of all, how did you get involved? What made you think of this as a topic? Because people talk about a lot of things and water generally isn't one of them.
Oh, sure. Well, hydration is something that we always think about in medicine, you know, whether a patient is hydrated or not. But there's a fair amount of nuance beyond that really simple metric. And for me, I think where it really came to bear on in my practice was when I read a book by Dr. Thomas Cowan called Cancer and the New Biology of Water. And he was very specifically outlining in this book how what we're going to talk about today, perhaps the fourth phase of water, this different structure of water itself and how it can relate to our health, and then very specifically how that might relate to cancer as a disease process. So, of course, that being, you know, my life's work in a lot of ways, this is something I really feel like I wanted to integrate, both for my patients, for myself, and then write about it on my blog. So I've got a couple articles up just on that because I feel like it is really important and underestimated feature of our health, just like you say. I mean, you know, we take it for granted that just water comes out of the pipe and we should drink it as is. But again, there is just far more nuance to the quality of water, not just the quantity in terms of how much we're getting in order to be hydrated.
Where would it be, 70% water? I mean, we're mostly not, you know, not what we eat. You know, it's really what's surrounding our cells and what's within our cells. Am I correct?
Yeah. And here's the catch. So if you go back to basic physics, I mean, even a child would recognize that there is at least three states of water, and that is the liquid form, there's the gaseous form in terms of water vapor, and then there's the solid form of ice. But the water that's within our body, that's within our cells, actually isn't in those three. Of course, there's liquid blood going through our system in circulation, but the water that's in our cells actually occupies this fourth phase of water, which is a gel-like phase. So if you think about something like gelatin or jello, and we make gelatin, jello at home, and we just take the gelatin itself and, you know, heat up a juice, combine it. And then once it cools, it causes this structure within it itself. And then it's kind of partially solid, kind of partially liquid. This is basically the phase of water that exists within our bodies. And it's really important that we recognize this. Because, for instance, if you cut yourself, yes, you bleed, but you don't necessarily start spilling out water all over the place. And so there's an integrity within our cells that is reliant upon this fourth phase of water. Mm-hmm. It's also the same reason why plants, particularly very tall trees, are able to transmit water as high as it can to the top of the branches against gravity. It's because this fourth phase of water has very specific properties in how it behaves. So the physics of the fourth phase of water is very different, and this is what we have to take into account when it comes to the health of our water, the structure of our water, and then by extension, the health of our bodies.
Well, I want to delve into that. So if the water itself isn't, it's all sorts of things, let's say fluoride in it, does that affect the fourth phase in any way? Does that affect the body's ability to take in water, detoxify, and actually run its physiologic functions?
Absolutely. There are many problems associated with water, and particularly when it comes to municipal water, ones that have to go through very extensive, you know, purification processes. There's a lot of disinfectant byproducts from chlorination, which are quite harmful, in fact, and in some cases are even carcinogenic, the trihalomethanes that are from the chlorination process. So that alone is automatically a detriment to the quality of water that we're taking to our body. Now you add fluoride to that, which is toxic. You add the fact that there could be residuals of pharmaceutical drugs within the water that don't get cleaned out. Even if you're on well water in a rural area, there's always the possibility of having pesticide and herbicide runoff that can be into the well water, high nitrates and such. So I think the first thing we have to consider is, what's the stuff in the water to begin with that should not be there, right? Mm-hmm. So what is just pure water, and then how we can really purify or otherwise render that water clean, you know, as it would be found in nature maybe hundreds of years ago before we started, you know, polluting the planet to the extent that we have. Mm-hmm. Then after we consider that, we have to think, well, how can we also alter water going forward to make it even healthier and to structure it, add minerals back in? So we can kind of go into any one of those aspects, and I'm sure just talk about that.
I think we're definitely going to hit those spots, because that's something I didn't realize, that we have the ability, it sounds like, to upgrade our water. We don't have to get stuck with it. Is it something you can, like a DIY sort of situation? I mean, we're going to go over it later, but I'd just like to start off the conversation with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, let's start philosophically. I think what we can recognize, and this is so dear to my heart as a practitioner of traditional medicine, and I'm sure you'll share the sentiment, is there's just a difference between water that is dead and then water that's alive. And that's no different in our case of thinking about food, where there's food that's coming right out of our garden. It's organic, it's full of life and vitality, as opposed to something that has been chemically altered, has been, or genetically altered in some cases, it's been sitting on a shelf, the nutrient quality is just degrading right before our very eyes, right? Mm-hmm. So water is very much the same way. I mean, I think there's almost, in some ways, almost a consciousness to water. Is it healthy water in the way that it has come to us from the ground, from maybe a deep artesianal well, as opposed to something that's been yanked out, put through all these copper pipes or maybe plastic pipes, and then delivered to us in a way where it's really devoid of the kind of the life force that we think about specifically in Chinese medicine. You know, does that water have qi force to it? So again, philosophically, does the water that's coming to your lips, does it have a sense of, wow, this is truly nourishing my body in an almost an intuitive way? And I think that's where we need to begin.
Well, I think if we're all energy, right? Cells are all energy, batteries, if you will, then water has to be a living, and it's so integral to our health. It makes absolute sense that it has to be living, charged, actually have an energy associated with it. And I want to, you know, go into more detail on that when we come back. So let's take our first break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Brandon LaGreca, and you again can go to his website, empoweredpatientblog.com, and read his blogs, and also Amazon and Goodreads and BookBub in order to get his books. And before the break, we were talking about the power of water, the energy of water. So you said something really struck me. Water isn't like a living thing. It's not dead. It's not like it doesn't have its own power, does it?
Yeah, no, I absolutely think of it in that way. You know, we think of the elements in general in Chinese medicine or traditional medicine. We think about, you know, the life force of the trees around us or the life force within the soil. And, you know, those aren't just abstract concepts. We think about, for instance, again, there's a difference between living soil that's full of microbes and just health and vitality as opposed to soil that's been sprayed with toxic chemicals and that doesn't have that life force anymore. Same with food, same with water, same with all these things and how they refer to our own health and well-being.
So from you're saying that whatever's been processed is no longer living. So let's go back to my question about how do you source it? I mean, if you're not camping, you're not getting it from a stream, let's say you live in the city, how can you actually take this power and this control back in terms of what water you're consuming?
Yeah. So we'll start with the basics. So most people either going to have one or two water sources at their tap. They're going to have that municipal water that's gone through an extensive, you know, cleansing process of chlorine and toxic chemicals that are applied to it, or they're going to have well water. Now, I tend to think that well water is generally a little bit better because you're not dealing with all the municipal cleaning that's going to happen to it. But again, you know, well water could still have problems associated with it. And so my recommendation is to always get your water tested to see what's exactly in it and what you might be dealing with. And then from that, you can make a decision about how you want to clean your own water as a point of source. Now, yes, you can buy bottled water, but in many cases, bottled water is just coming from municipal supplies anyway. So you're still going to be dealing with the same thing with an added cost, and you're dealing with plastic bottles and all these things where your water shouldn't be really be contained in anyway. So I think the really only logical solution, and in some ways the best in terms of cost, of course, is just a point of source filtration. How are you going to do that? And from that perspective, there's a couple different options. One of them is just to, you know, have a reverse osmosis. And a reverse osmosis system, although there's a pretty big upfront cost for it, for sure works in the sense that if you have really polluted water, that is one way where you can absolutely get it perfectly clean in the sense that you're really only going to end up with H2O on the other side of it. Well, the problem with reverse osmosis is it pulls out everything that could possibly be in that water, even all the healthy stuff, that minerals, for instance, that could be there. So if you choose to do a reverse osmosis system, you have to always remember to put minerals back into your water the way that would come from nature. Another option is to just basically get a point of source carbon filter. And there's different medias that can be used, such as carbon or clay or zeolite. But this tends to be a less expensive option. And if your water is really not all that bad, but just could need a little cleanup, something like a carbon filter that either is under the counter or over the counter is a pretty good option. And then finally, there's a third option, which is a gravity fed, which is something like a Berkey filter, which many people are familiar with, which is just kind of like a water cooler setup where you would pour a bunch of water in, and then on the other side from the tap, where it just comes down by gravity, it's not plugged into any electric source, the water that comes out of that is fairly well purified. So one of those three is likely going to be the best solution mm-hmm. for our listeners. And then for there, at least now we're at least starting as a starting point that water is going to be clean coming to us, you know, from one of those three systems.
You know, there's also the other side of this where people go and buy their water from, Whole Foods or whatever the big box store is. And is there a benefit to high pH alkalinized water? That's been a marketing tool, you know, used. I personally think it's probably helpful, but what's your take on that?
So that's a good question, you know, and I think I don't have a very mature consensus on this. But there's a lot of things now that we're talking about purified water that we can do to the water to maybe increase its energy, decrease its vitality. So one of those is ionization. And just like you say, that's an attempt to create basically a higher pH water. I'm not all that convinced that having water that's more alkaline is immediately beneficial to us. For one reason, I don't think we should be drinking high alkaline water around whenever we're eating something. And the reason why is because obviously we need acidity in our stomach to digest our food. So we don't want to be counteracting that with something that's very alkaline. Now, if someone wanted to alkalize with water in between meals, I think that would be perfectly suitable. And certainly, you know, within the naturopathic tradition, there is this notion that we could increase the alkalinity within our water with things like baking soda and such. And that has its own distinct benefit on detoxification. So I think there's a place for that. But the question is, you know, for these machines that do ionize water and increase the antioxidant potential of it, is that really the best use of our time and resources to do with water? And maybe not. I think there's a second thing which I'm even more intrigued with, and there's a lot that goes into this science, which is actually increasing the hydrogen content of the water or the oxygen content by extension. So you're not maybe necessarily altering the pH of the water, but you are increasing these dissolved solids in them, such as the hydrogen and oxygen. And there's a lot of really interesting research on both of those, increasing the oxygen potential of the water and increasing the dissolved hydrogen in the water with treating maybe a number of different disease states. And so one of them that came up for me, of course, in my research is this notion that increasing the hydrogen content in the water may have very distinct positive benefits for people who do have cancer. So there's a couple good, interesting options there. And I think, you know, the research isn't like totally behind any single one of them. But at this point, I'm going to probably put my money behind, you know, these different kind of equipment setups that can increase the oxygen or hydrogen within the water itself, more so than just the pH.
Is that really a biochemical take on free radical formation? I mean, if you have another hydrogen to give, it's going to become water and neutralize this acidic species in the blood and in the body.
Right. So, you know, the smoking gun of cancer is always reactive oxygen species, right? So what is causing damage on a cellular level? And anything that counteracts that, which is one of the reasons why antioxidants can be the real sweet spot in terms of getting our body what it needs to counteract that. But there's another possibility here. And that is, water doesn't just exist as H2O. Water also has an isotope, which is D2O. And the D stands for deuterium. Deuterium, this isotope of hydrogen, actually produces what it's called heavy water. And for any quart of water, there's literally a drop or two of this heavy water, this D2O, in it. And the thinking is that we're not totally clear on it, but there seems to be this association between people who have more of this deuterium in their system, within their cells itself, and higher cancer rates. Now, we don't know what the kind of the causality of that is, or if it's association, but at least from my kind of look at the research into this, there does seem to be a suggestion that if we can find ways to so-called naturally deplete deuterium from either our water or from our bodies, that we can reverse some interesting disease states, cancer being one of them. And so what I'm going to suggest to you then is, what I would like to see done in terms of further research is something like hydrogen-rich water. I think it's possible that might in itself be a way that we can deplete deuterium from our body. I think there's other ways we can do it, but I think that's probably going to be one of the key areas of research going forward that we're going to see a lot more interesting things come out of. So possibly depleting deuterium from our water itself or from our body by a different means, and seeing how we have different health outcomes on the other side of that.
I know there's a, I don't know if it's a study, but I had a guest on a while back that talked about a group of people who lived in, I don't know if it's the Himalayas or somewhere, where they were pretty much sequestered, and they were drinking deuterium depleted water naturally, and they had very long lifespans associated with it.
Yeah. And so when we looked at, you know, people like the Hunzas and such, where they're getting really amazing, good quality glacial water, you know, the initial thought is, well, that water, one, it's very clean, and it's very high in certain minerals, which is certainly true. But then as they looked a little bit more into the source of the water, there's also this concept that it could be very depleted deuterium. It's because deuterium has different physics to it than just normal H2O. And its freezing point is 4 degrees Celsius as opposed to 0 degrees Celsius. So when you look at the really cold glacial water that's running, but is going to be somewhere close to that freezing point, the deuterium will actually probably freeze off and be left behind. And then what's remaining is really deuterium depleted water. And so it could very well be that these people have this advantage in terms of not only is the water very mineral rich, but it's also depleted of this heavy water at the same time.
That's pretty cool. I mean, you can't ignore this. I mean, it's like a population that's completely pretty much cut off from everything else. And you start looking at cause and effect and the different variables in their diet, it starts to become kind of, it's tantalizing and interesting. And is there a way that we can do that as a DIY?
So I've looked at this, and there's no real good way that we can make deuterium depleted water at home. Mm-hmm. So there are companies, I mean, it's a really intensive industrial process in order to make it. So there are companies that are doing it, supplying it as bottled water, but it seems to be pretty cost prohibitive. So this is just one of these areas where the industry needs some disruption. And then hopefully there'll be better and more cost effective solutions down the line. I think the best thing we can do for now is, even though the deuterium issue is interesting, I think there might be we might be better off just focusing on maybe trying to enrich our water with oxygen and hydrogen, and then seeing on the other side of that if we can deplete our bodies of deuterium by extension. And I think that's something that would be very easy to study. I mean, there you can get a home test kit for deuterium content within your body. So this could be one of these things, and I provide links for this in one of the blogs that we're referencing today, where there's a saliva test and a breath test that measures deuterium content. And I think it's one of these things that if someone really wanted to get rigorous in studying it, they could certainly measure, let's say, their breath or the saliva, and then drink hydrogen-rich water for 3 to 6 months, test again, and see if there's a depletion process that happens when you flood the body full of hydrogen. You know, does that displace deuterium much in the same way that we think someone who's halogen toxic, let's say they have high amounts of bromide or chloride, can we give them iodine and displace those toxic halogens? So we know that's the case. We can detox people of halogens. So why could not we do that with this isotope of hydrogen at the same time? So I think there's some really interesting work that we can do there. But I think that's probably going to be a better long-term solution to maybe access some of these richer hydrogen oxygen waters, as opposed to looking for ways to deplete the deuterium in the water itself. We should deplete our bodies, the deuterium.
Gotcha. On that note, let's take our next break, because you just brought up a whole interesting thing from a health perspective. We spend so much time on pharmaceuticals and taking medications to try to mask, and I don't even know these days what they're trying to do. But if you could just use the body's natural tendency to balance itself, just give it its building blocks, it seems like a much better way to, and cost-effective way and less toxic way to do it. So on that note, let's take our next break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Brandon LaGreca. And, you know, before the break, Brandon, I think you did a really wonderful job of just giving us the power of simple things, simplicity. It doesn't have to be that hard, does it?
I like simple solutions.
Yeah, I like that. And it's use the body to help itself. Now, for those who really may not be tight with their physiology and their biochemistry, you know, water's charged, is it not? And so are the cells. And so we're talking about being able to have something come into the cell, bring nutrients, take out waste, and actually be able to transport. Is that a way that people can think about good quality water that's able to do its work? I mean, aren't there ion pores that the cells have in the cell wall for water that it's able to get in and out?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, water we think of as the universal solvent. I mean, it's going to carry everything through. It's probably one of the reasons, it is the reason that when we make homeopathic medicines, we do that in a water base. There's a way that water can retain the memory of whatever that ingredient is, even though we're diluting it so far down. And that speaks a lot to the work of Dr. Emoto, who I had the very good fortune of hearing him speak many years ago, kind of back when I was in graduate school. And he's long since passed away, but he had this idea that you could look at water as being not just a solvent in the chemical sense, but also as a carrier for thought, for information. And so he made these very elaborate photographs of water crystals that were freezing after you expose the water to different thoughts and intentions and see what the structure of the water looks like. I think that's very much the case. I mean, I have no trouble believing that from my, you know, education in traditional medicine, that there's this fact that water can be almost like a solvent for thoughts and emotions and consciousness almost. And so, and homeopathic remedies certainly suggest that that's the case. Mm-hmm. So, you know, can we think about water as very much being this carrier of life force into the body, not just of minerals in a chemical sense, but of just vitality in general? And I think the answer to that is quite clearly yes.
And from, you know, the healing side of what you just described, I mean, I can imagine how gratifying, honestly, that it must be to have somebody come in with a disease state, use this many modalities, but using energy to rebalance, to reset with intention and see the outcome of it. It's kind of interesting. I mean, it's such a layered, subtle but powerful modality.
And you know, and at the end of the day, I mean, what we're always talking about is being humble into the life force that really that created the body that heals the body, and that we're really just, you know, guideposts to provide that for our patients, that we give them this kind of natural wisdom. They make these very, you know, subtle changes in some cases, but can have very big long-term effects. And the way I like to think about it is, oftentimes, health is more of a trajectory issue. We've made certain bad choices, and they're putting us on a path going in this direction. And I'll say to a patient, you know, maybe their blood sugar markers are off, and I'll look at them, and I'll say, I know where that train's going for you. I know what it looks like 3, 4, 5 years down the line if you don't change the way that your, you know, your behaviors and your habits of what they're creating inside of you. And so sometimes we just need to make a small nudge. But that small nudge, now we're going a few degrees in a different direction, but that can completely change the trajectory of that patient's life. So it doesn't mean we have to take these massive, you know, I'm going to go 180 degrees and do all these things. No, sometimes it's just a small little nudge, but that's enough to get things moving. And water is a great example of that. Just having some small changes to clean up your water can have long-term effects that can have repercussions for the rest of your life.
So can you think of it also for people with inflammatory issues, inflammation essentially? Is this a way that can naturally reverse that? Is that something?
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. Of many things, of course, as you well know, you know, it's one step of many. And I think a better way to think about it is, you know, where are all the different areas that my life could be out of balance and that there's things that I can correct. And then once I have, you know, all my ducks in a row, you know, just see how the magic of the body can heal around that. But for sure, I do definitely notice that, you know, again, it's not just the focus that we think of in, you know, Western biomedical of, are you drinking enough water and you're hydrated? I think it's much more interesting question to think not just about the quantity that we're getting into our body, but the quality and how that affects our overall health.
Looking at your article about making structured water, and sunlight apparently is something that, well, we can all do this, but can you describe how that would change the nature, the living nature of the water just by exposing it to sun?
Yeah, so this is the work of Dr. Gerald Pollack, who's the person who really brought this fourth phase of water concept to our attention. There's several other researchers involved with this, but he has done some really interesting work in what he calls exclusion zone water. And I actually had the pleasure of meeting him last year. We were speaking at the same conference, and I had breakfast with him. And I got to drill him in all my fun questions about fourth phase of water. But essentially, what he's found in his research that one of the things that creates structure within water itself is exposure to sunlight. And that's happening largely from light in the infrared spectrum. And so this has several really interesting implications for it. So one is the structuring of water in our environment's happening. Let's look at, you know, think of rivers and oceans and wherever we have, you know, water around us, is it's being exposed to sunlight and it's having this natural structuring like effect on it. And so we could do this to our water. We could do this, and you know, the old teacher and naturopath Hazel Parcells, I think she would recommend taking a glass, you know, big glass jar of water and putting it out for the sun to beat down on it. And that would have this effect of structuring or energizing the water. So we can do that. We can put our water out in a glass jar and have the sun beat on it and have structured water as a result of that. But then there's the second implication, which is, well, our bodies are made of water, right? We know it's in this fourth phase within our body when it's healthy. How do we structure the water within our own bodies itself? And so that can be just as simple as getting more, say, sun exposure. Mm-hmm. It could also mean going into a sauna, a natural sauna, and a low EMF sauna, because you know me, but a sauna that has these wavelengths in the near to mid and even into the far, so a full spectrum infrared sauna, and then energize our bodies that way. And this is a wonderful strategy for the wintertime. You know, here I am in Wisconsin. We're not getting a whole lot of good sunlight in the wintertime, but we could rely on, you know, infrared, full spectrum infrared bulbs to expose our body with this healthy of infrared and then structure the water within our own bodies. And most people intuitively will be able to say, hey, I've sat in a sauna for 20 minutes and I just feel good. I feel energized. I feel like my body is doing what it should be. Or they'll be on a beach. They'll sit in the sand, right? They'll have the waves crashing on them, getting all these negative ions. They'll get the sun exposure, get their infrared from that way. And they'll say, I feel terrific. Well, that's no mystery, right? We're charging up our bodies. We're bringing that life force to it. And in the process, we're structuring our own body's water.
So all the things that we take for granted and just, actually, we're not even doing that anymore. So let me just backtrack then. If sun is this powerful agent, what is sunscreen doing to you then? Is it blocking this effect?
Absolutely. So I try to use it the least amount possible, you know, and I have a young family and it's the same. I mean, that's why I say that I think the ethic is to have safe sun exposure. You want to go out there. You want to gradually introduce your body to the sun. You want to build it up where you're tanning naturally without burning yourself. And I think that's the wisdom, but not just to keep blocking ourselves with toxic sunscreens and such. In fact, I just came across a research paper of increase of cancer incidence around some of the toxic ingredients that are in sunscreen. So here we are thinking we're trying to do something better for ourselves and avoid sun exposure to ward off skin cancer. Then here we are having different kinds of cancer that comes from the ingredients. So no, I almost never use sunscreen. I just kind of stay out till I'm just slightly getting a little bit pink and then that's it. I'm going to go back inside or cover up or whatever the case may be. But you know, you don't want to prevent your body from getting these natural, you know, I call it vitamin sunshine. People just talk about vitamin D from the sun, but that's not good enough for me. I'm thinking about all of the things known and unknown that we are getting from exposure to the sun. So yeah, all of those things, it would be a shame to block them all with just sunscreen all the time.
It seems to be a pattern. What we're told to do to keep ourselves healthy just seems to work the opposite way. It's just the list that just keeps getting longer. It's kind of interesting, to put it mildly.
Yeah.
Well, I know we talked about how the sun can work. I'm curious to know what kind of things we can do to add minerals back. Because a while ago, you spoke about reverse osmosis. How do you get the magnesium, whatever else, selenium, whatever else needs to get back in there? Is there something that we can use that would get those back into the water that we drink?
Yeah, so there's all sorts of mineral supplements out there, and they all have their pros and cons associated with them. You know, one that I think is excellent and it has been used for quite some time is, basically a form of seawater. There's a couple companies out there that are doing it. The oldest is Keton water that's made off of the coast of Europe. And that's just basically a purified seawater that can be consumed or placed into water to remineralize it. And that's interesting because if you look at, you know, human blood, it basically is very close in terms of mineral content to what we'd find in seawater. And so it's almost as if both in salinity and minerals that our blood itself is like seawater and how it chemically exists. So there's really kind of highfalutin stuff like that we can do. But then there's really the kind of ultra simple and really easy to access, which is good mineralized sea salt. And there's a way we can just put a pinch of that into our water and put the minerals back in. Now, we're not going to be able to do that with table salt, which is just sodium chloride, which has just been bleached, processed in a way where those minerals are removed. But if you have really good, either an earth salt or a sea salt, that you just put a pinch into your water, and your water's not going to taste salty. That's not the point. What you're doing is putting some minerals back in. Now, if someone was really sodium sensitive, which I think actually more people need sodium than they realize, but if someone really truly was sodium sensitive, there are a number of liquid mineral products out there that don't have the sodium, but do have the full, you know, range of minerals and trace minerals in particular that can go back into your water. And usually just a squirt of that in water will do. But for most people, I think the easiest solution is going to be some kind of mineralized sea salt that you can just put just a pinch in the water and that'll put the minerals back in.
So you really don't need a lot at all, sounds like.
No, I mean, you know, there are definitely cases, and we know this clinically, where someone might need more of one mineral or another, and we can kind of figure that out. And if someone needs more magnesium, maybe we're going to recommend Epsom salt baths and such. But for just kind of a general amount of minerals within your water, sea salt's enough. You know, the other options that exist are there's humic and fulvic minerals that are liquid forms, and those are excellent. And I think those are good for a number of other different, you know, health functions of the body. And so that's what I'll have. I have both a humic and a fulvic mineral liquid supplement, and I just have them right on our table. And, you know, we'll just as a family, whenever we're filling up our glass with whatever we're drinking, just put a squirt of each of those in there. And that's something you could do in addition to, you know, putting salt on your food, for instance. You can just put fulvic or humic minerals. Another thing that you can do too, and this is really fun for athletes, you know, don't waste your money on Gatorade. That's a bunch of junk and sugar in there anyway. But, you know, an all-natural sports drink is just a splash of apple cider vinegar and a pinch of salt. I mean, that's where your electrolytes are coming from for the salt. Gatorade is really actually salty, but you don't taste it because of how much sugar and or artificial sweeteners they put in it. But you can do that naturally. You can put a splash of apple cider vinegar, maybe a teaspoon of honey, and a good solid pinch of salt and a quart of water. Stir that up, mix it up, and there's your sports drink. You're good to go.
Without all the chemical coloring, et cetera.
Right, exactly. Put not all the junk in it. That's not going to help your performance at all. I can guarantee you that.
I'm pretty sure that you're right. On that note, let's take our last break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Brandon LaGreca. And Brandon, I spoke about Amazon and some of the websites that people can buy your book. Can I get them directly on your website?
Yeah, you can. So my author website is just brandonlagreca.com. And if you get there through my blog, which you mentioned before, empoweredpatientblog.com, I mean, they're all going to go to the same place. But brandonlagreca.com, right on the main homepage, you'll see the first couple books we've written. And hopefully sometime next year, you'll see the third book I'm working on too. So, but they'll all be available right on my main author website.
Excellent. So, you know, we talked a lot about drinking water, but I think you mentioned Epsom salt baths. People forget their skin is an organ that can absorb water, right? So isn't it just as important that you use the proper water to bathe in, to shower with, wash your hair?
Absolutely. Yeah. And so when it comes to having, you know, maybe not all that great water coming out of the tap, I mean, you can certainly filter your drinking water and cooking water at a point of source. But you know, then that still leaves this question about your bathing water. So, well, a couple options there. I mean, you could get a whole house filter, and some people do that, and that will clear out all of the water going through all of your pipes. Mm-hmm. And now there are some point of source filters, for instance, that'll take chlorine out of water as it's pouring into your bathtub. But absolutely, if you don't have good water coming out of your tap, I mean, your skin is porous. It's going to drink that up just as well. So we have to be very mindful, again, and maybe test your water to see what you might be getting exposed to. But that to know for sure that the things in your shower or your bath is also going to be something that your skin can possibly take up.
Can you use things like itchy, dry skin or loss of hair as signs that maybe you're toxic?
Yes. And it could be very literal in the sense that it's something that you're topically being exposed to. So you think of atopic dermatitis. Mm-hmm. And I'm always asking about, you know, what's your detergent? what is the soap you're using, what are the body care products, but it can also very literally just be the water that you're exposed to. Someone who likes taking a lot of baths and the water itself is causing irritation on the skin. You know, one thing you can do, I mean, the skin is slightly acidic, so one thing you could do is always put a little bit of apple cider vinegar in your bath water too, just to change the pH, and the skin tends to like that, and the hair tends to like that as well. But yeah, all bets are off if the water coming out of the tap is not all that great to begin with.
Now, apple cider vinegar, just for those listening, it's alkaline, isn't it?
Well, no, it's acetic acid, so it's acidic. Okay. What you're probably referring to is it's the metabolic effect on our body can be alkaline. And so the way that I describe this is think about the things we ingest, the foods and such, as there's a certain, you know, macronutrient content to it. But when those things are metabolized, when the sugars or the fats burn away, the mineral salt that's left over can be acid or alkaline. So think about like the ash left over once you burn a log. And so our body is similar to that. So even though a lemon, for instance, is very acidic, once your body processes that, the mineral residue from that is actually alkalizing to the body. So it's a little confusing, but apple cider vinegar works in the same way, where it's initially acidic going in, and that has its benefits. For instance, we can use apple cider vinegar with meals to help digest the food. But then once it's been processed, you know, once it goes through the full breath of digestion, the effect on the body overall is going to be alkalizing it.
Gotcha. And overall, because it's all about health at the end of the day, is the body being more alkaline less decrease your risk for things of diseases, specifically cancer and inflammatory diseases?
I think so, but I also think it's very dependent on the person and their constitution. And so this kind of harkens back to the Chinese medicine concept of yin and yang. And some people have a yang constitution that's very hot, that's very active, and some people have a yin constitution, which is the opposite of that. And, you know, my research into cancer, I think that the majority of cancers, which are the solid cancers, things like breast cancer and prostate cancer and such, those are cancers of the nervous system where it is sympathetically dominant. And that's a yang type state. And these are people who definitely will benefit from probably eating a more plant food diet, from alkalizing. And it's going to reverse the trend of acidity that's going to come from that sympathetic dominance. But there's the exception. There are the people who have blood cancers, like leukemias and lymphomas, who are more parasympathetic dominant. They're that yin type of constitution. And they're actually going to do better with things that are actually a little more acidifying in their body. So what I'll say is, if we were to take a broad stroke when it comes to things like cancer and most things like heart disease and autoimmune disease, you know, we may see that most people are probably going to do better in the toxic world that we live in to alkalize more as a overall healing strategy. But you are going to come across people who are going to be in the opposite side of the spectrum and may not do as well. And so, you know, with those alkalizing principles. And so for them, we're always going to be, and here's where the nuance comes in, is we're going to have to be very specific and kind of catering to their own metabolic needs based upon their constitution.
Now I'm going to ask a tough question because I'm curious, actually. Is there any way to determine which you are, yin or yang?
Yeah, so we certainly have our own way to diagnose that within Chinese medicine, in the sense that I'm looking at a patient and how they hold their posture, how they speak. You know, do they have that more yang type A constitution? Or are they more kind of meek and quiet in their disposition? You know, are they more an introvert? Are they more yin in constitution? Mm. But that's not a hard and fast rule. What I will tell you, at least from the cancer literature, and this goes back to the work of Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez, I mean, he basically said there's the sympathetic dominant and the parasympathetic dominant people, and there's a lot of gray area in between. And so you're going to individualize diet and supplements according to that, you know, that person's constitution. But generally speaking, the people who have solid tumors, people who have, you know, a lot of heart disease and such, those are going to be people who are sympathetic dominant, which is frankly the majority of people within, you know, within our country and abroad. And the parasympathetic may be a little less so. But I've really thought about this too, Dr. George. I don't think there's any hard and fast test that we can do where we can say someone is operating one way or the other. And of course, we vacillate between those states
daily, probably by minute, depending on who you're talking to, what you're watching, what you're listening to, probably.
Yeah. And so the name of the game is always balance. You know, we may have a tendency to be one of those states or the other. But we always want to try to counterbalance that. And that's going to be different things for different people.
That's what I love about what you do and your profession. It's that it's not one size fits all. And that's what makes it so powerful. Nobody's the same. Everybody's different. And just the fact that you are in tuned enough to figure that out, that's a boon to your patients. So I applaud what you do.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it, Dr. George.
Now, in the minutes that we have left, how can people get your books, read your blogs? Do you also have any courses that you're giving as well?
Not online yet. Some stuff locally coming soon. What I would tell folks is if they want to get a hold of me, my main website is brainalagreca.com. In addition to my books and my blogs, which are available there, I am available for consulting online too. It's kind of a new way that I'm going to reach out to people and help when I can. So I'm kind of backing off a little bit more from seeing patients in person here, but doing some consulting online. I think that's largely been because I've had an increased demand for cancer patients who have heard my story and kind of want to talk about different strategies there that I've kind of made myself available, on the internet, as it were. So trying to have a foot in both worlds at this time. But that's been fun and gratifying too to help people from all over the place and get to hear their stories as well.
I think it's empowering. Just the fact that there's hope. Isn't that part of also what gives us our positive energy and helps us balance ourselves? It's that always that kernel of there's something that I can do or something that I don't understand that will help, that makes a difference.
Absolutely. I mean, to me, at the end of the day, that is what matters most to me. When I interact with patients, is I'm trying to pull that out of them, right? Mm-hmm. Well, what is it that fundamentally empowers them and brings them to life? Because, we're not just in this to prevent people from dying. We're in this to create life within people, to make life worth living. And so we do that by empowering them to help them recognize that they do have choices in any given situation, that we can bring vitality back to them, that they can just be more robust in how they meet each new day. And so for me, that is absolutely why I do what I do.
Well, that's the perfect place to end the show, because that's what life's about. I'm so happy that you're able to come on. I know how busy you are, but it's a blessing to have you on, and thank you so much for everything you do.
Thank you, Dr. George. God bless you and your audience.
Thank you. And thank you, everybody, for living in the solution.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk Events.